From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We have a few laughs for you today, and at this point in the news cycle, you might really need them. Comedian Maria Bamford is here, along with our break room gang. Among other topics, we'll talk about who works harder, baby boomers or millennials.
You got a job. That must have been hard considering the financial crisis the baby boomers caused. They may think we're on our phones texting and Twittering all day, but we should cut them some slack. When they were growing up, their parents drank and took naps at work.
That's coming up. First, though, we devoted an hour yesterday to Hispanic Heritage Month, and we tried to explain the difference between being Hispanic and Latino. That's part of a series we call Break It Down. So here are your first thoughts. Aaron Calvert tweeted, "My Spanish ancestors came to the U.S. 400 years ago and intermarried with the Navajo and Pueblo tribes. Am I Hispanic?" So, Aaron, you probably do not have enough Spanish blood at this point to be considered Hispanic, but you could consider yourself just an American with Hispanic and Native American ancestors. We also asked you what topics you would like to have us and our experts explain in the future.
Hi, this is Sarah Thurman from Athens, Georgia. And for the explainer series, I'd love to hear you talk about what a disorder is, or a disease, or an ailment. I get stuck in the literal meaning of dis-ease and disorder, and I don't quite understand what other people mean.
That is a great suggestion. David Cook also called and asked us to talk about the term transgender.
Sometimes, especially online, I see people use the word transgendered, like a past tense verb. I know there are trans is actually an umbrella term, and there are a lot of variations in different sort of groups that people identify with.
That's another great suggestion, and we love getting them from you. You can call us like they did at 404-500-9457. We're also on the Twitter. It's at OST Talk, or reach us on Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. She is Stephen Colbert's favorite comedian.
I heard you years and years ago with Marc Maron on the old Air America radio, and I thought, who is this person with these extraordinary voices? This deeply troubled person with extraordinary voices.
Listen, Stephen, a lot of people don't think that I'm this confident woman inside.
No, I have those voices because this one is so less than what I had hoped for.
Maria Bamford has been called one of the 50 funniest people now by Rolling Stone, and her Netflix series Lady Dynamite gets raves from both viewers and critics. She'll perform tonight at the Tabernacle in Atlanta, but right now she is my guest. Maria Bamford, welcome.
Thank you, Celeste, for having me on the program.
It's nice to have you here.
Yes.
I wonder, what is the difference for you in terms of preparation between, because you do a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
So how much preparation does it take for, say, a stand-up show as opposed to a scripted comedy, as opposed to a more improvised TV comedy?
Well, for stand-up, my brain may be different from others. I definitely have to rehearse and be ready and have only one set. I don't switch out 1,000 sets or say, oh, God, you know, I'm here in Atlanta, so I'll do my Atlanta bits. No, everyone's getting the same hour from me, so I need to rehearse, and then definitely for the TV show, that was sort of all a blur because I did not realize with TV production, it turns out it's very hard work, and it's like 15 hours.
But you've been
hours.
Doing TV for a very long time. Is it because this was your own show?
Yes, because I was in every scene, and it turns out
that
you've created a full-time job for yourself, which was hilarious that I didn't, that was surprising to me. wait a minute, you guys still need me? I was trying to convince them to write one scene per episode where I was played by someone else, it would be written into the premise that I was too exhausted to do my own TV show, which is partially true.
What about hecklers? Because a lot of times we see there's certain comedians who like make a name for themselves in terms of handling hecklers.
I think that is just so much less likely now. I think with the internet, the people who come to see shows know exactly what they're coming to see. Heckling happens when people have been told, oh, it's going to be comedy, you know, something vague. And then they're said there's a drink minimum and then they're forced to sit through three acts, two of which they're uncertain about, and that's when heckling begins. It's a combination of alcohol and confusing advertising.
So let's talk about Lady Dynamite. The very first episode has what we think is an ad for hair products, and you're flipping your hair as you dance and drive through the city looking totally fabulous. Let's listen to that.
Ain't no man gonna tell me I ain't a woman.
Maria?
Hey, Maria, what are you doing?
A hair commercial?
No. This is not a hair ad. It's the show. It's your show. Let's get you to the van, okay?
My show? I have a show?
So, honey, this kind of plays to your surprise.
Yes. It is. It's a late in life boon. I'm 46. What? Like, I get to have my own.
That's like exactly middle age, though.
Yeah.
You still got another half.
I think it's about the time that Lucille Ball got to did her show. But for somebody with, I don't genuinely have a ton of, I sleep 10 hours a night, that type of thing. I am not a supremely active person. It's spectacular that it's happening. So I'm so grateful. And my husband and I, it's like winning the lottery to have a TV show.
A lottery you have to work really hard for.
We're all 25 years in, but we paid off the house. And now at this point, we could retire to Utah. We figured out financially.
Did you
if
want
we
to?
Wish to. No.
Okay.
So we got to wait a while, but
to upgrade in
upgraded
states.
To perhaps, I mean, not that Utah isn't wonderful. Just we might have to be a little isolated in a smaller area.
So you actually grew up mostly in the Midwest.
Yes.
And I wonder how you feel that may have changed your comedy or your approach to comedy, that you didn't grow up in a place like L.A. or New York or a bigger city.
Well, I'm grateful that I didn't know how many extremely talented people there were in the world and how strong their work ethic was, because I think I would have been ashamed to show, because now I think there's... I just think in Duluth, I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota, where it was very, I know there's a Duluth, Georgia, so I don't want to confuse people.
Yeah.
But my high school was small, so you could participate in everything. And there was never, I just don't remember a lot of pressure about, being the best or going anywhere and, becoming a standout or famous or something like that. So I'm grateful for that in a lot of ways, because I think I might have bailed early had I known what was
what
out
the
there.
Competition
yeah.
was like.
Oh, God.
You know, there has been a kind of, I mean, at least to me, looking from the outside, there seems to be a kind of an evolution in comedy. We have your comedy, which is, it's not turning mental illness into something funny, but it's at least dealing with it in a comedic way. You had Tig Notaro, who's made headlines mm-hmm. for dealing with cancer in
yes.
a comedic way.
Yes.
What do you think is kind of driving this this change?
I think there's a boom in terms of the creativity because of the internet. From what I can tell, it's just you can find more niche audiences, whether it's for music or comedy, that people, there's enough people to support a very specific point of view. I don't think I would have been able to have a career even, 10, 15 years ago, definitely not had a TV show, because I wouldn't be able to connect with all the people who would relate with my specific story. But because... yeah, there's just so much more access, and people can find, Google mental illness, comedian. Oh, well, I'd probably come up, or, something that maybe wasn't accessible before. Like, I didn't realize until I looked it up myself, Jonathan Winters talked about his own mental illness in the 60s, came out, I believe, on the Emmys and said, I'm out, because he had been in a psychiatric institution for 6 months or something. So that's information that's more available now, and you can find, you know, you can find specifically, a Christian comedian who's dealing with depression, who actually exists. And I think I want to say her name is Chandra Pierce.
I think a bunch of people are probably Googling it now.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard she's very good, and it's delightful. It's really made for a comedy boom for sure.
How does that help in general, though, in terms of being able to find niches? Do you see that as sort of a positive force for the audience?
I think it can be positive and negative. Like I was talking to in the lounge out here in the waiting room, just like about politics. Like, well, it's kind of good to talk to people who have a different point of view because.
Yeah.
You learn.
Yeah.
And that is something that I completely can avoid. You know, I do not hear another point of view when I'm at my own shows. Which can be somewhat of a relief. I mean, I think the first 10 years of my career, you know, it's heart-wrenching to have people say, you're funny, you know, to have heckling and all that stuff, which I think you get a lot more of when you're first beginning because you are performing for crowds who neither of you know that the other person was going to be there.
Right.
I had no
Surprise.
Idea you were going to be at this casino too. Whoops. It's neither of our faults. Let's not blame each other.
I mean, you are involved in a couple Netflix projects because you also do a voice for BoJack Horseman, which has been very successful.
Yes.
What do you make of the Netflix phenomenon in a way that they are transforming into an original content service from what started as a company that used to just mail you DVDs?
Yeah, I am just infinitely grateful. Of course, I mean, I think I have a biased point of view, obviously, but it really makes a huge difference for creative people. At least everyone who I talk to who run shows in Los Angeles, where when it was just three networks, and when you went in to pitch something, was this specific? If you didn't have their support, then the idea died. Whereas Netflix and so many other content providers, you can go in, and Netflix, as far as I can tell, said to Mitch Hurwitz and Pam Brady, who are the executive producers
of Arrested Development and South Park.
Yeah, and also for Lady Dynamite, they just said, do whatever you want. Like, I don't remember there wasn't a lot of outside pressure or people saying, well, Rhea needs to get some Botox done, or which I think is very common on the network shows, that there's a lot more watching of what do people want? Oh, turns out Maria, when she her head is over on that side, you know, let's try to get all it, like I just think there's much more. Risk involved, I think, with those shows. Whereas, yeah, it seems like with Netflix and other content providers, they're more loosey goosey and let you do what you want.
We have about 30 seconds left. So, do you do any jokes that you specialize for the South? Do you have to change that?
Well, the only one I love hearing liberal people with a Southern accent. There's just nothing more delightful than, well, my wife and I, you know, we're post-op transgender. And so, you know, we run a vegan barbecue, and we're doing a fundraiser this weekend. I wrote a little song about universal health care. Like my grandpappy says, it's a basic human right.
Comedian, actress, and writer Maria Bamford. You can see her on stage tonight at 8 at the Tabernacle in Atlanta. Her comedy special, Lady Dynamite, is on Netflix. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's add a couple more tunes to our Georgia playlist. That's our series in which we ask people to choose two songs that they think best represent the Peach State. The rules are very simple. Nominations have to be songs written or performed by a Georgian, and musicians cannot nominate their own songs. The Atlanta-based duo Saint Beauty will perform tonight at the Afropunk Festival in Atlanta. They stopped by our studios recently, and we asked them to give us their selections for the playlist. Here are their picks.
East Point. Valley Ball in the house. Hi, I'm Isis Valentino, and I'm one half of Saint Beauty. The song that I would be choosing for the Georgia playlist is AT Aliens by Outkast. Well, it's the M.I. cricket letter. Ain't no one better. And when I'm on the microphone, you best to wear your sweater, because I'm cooler than the polar bear's toenails. Oh, hell, there he go again. Talking that I only listened to gospel music because that's how I grew up. I remember I loved that song, and that was the first song I was able to play in the car with my parents. What you make, but how much you spend, you got me bent like elbows, amongst other things, but I'm not worried. Because when we set up in the party, like I'm out, you serve it, so go. And the song was just like a really cool, like, vibey song, like, just southern, and I don't know, like, it just feels good. It just felt good. Knuckles to your eye, and I try to warn you not to test, but you don't listen. Giving a shout out to my Uncle Donnell, locked up in prison. Now throw your hands in the air. And wave like you just don't care. And if you like fish and grits and all that, everybody let me hear you say, oh yeah, you're. And if you like fish and grits and all that pimps, everybody let me hear you say, oh yeah, you're. My oral illustration. You know, they're called Outkast, and I felt that way because I was really tall and like super skinny and just awkward. And I was always seen as kind of weird and like the girl who was into like gadgets and technology and stuff, and all my friends thought I was like a geek. Being in school, like, obviously everyone wants to be cool, and that's just how like Atlanta was, like, you know, the polos, the K-Swiss or whatever, Reeboks. Now break a tenfold. Can I get some reply? Now everybody say, the song was just like a really cool, like, vibey song, like, just southern, and I don't know, like, it just feels good. It just felt good. And wave them like you just don't care. And if they like fish and grits and all the pimps, everybody let me hear you say, oh,
Hey, my name is Alex Bell. I'm also a part of Saint Beauty, and the song I chose for the Georgia playlist is So Gone by Monica. So gone over you, 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 you. Yeah, new Monica.
Woo. Silly of me, devoted so much time to find you unfaithful, boy. I nearly lost my mind. Woo.
Monica is from Atlanta. She's from College Park, Georgia. I actually sang that song for my sixth grade literature class. It was just a song that went well with my voice. I used to mimic her voice when I was younger. So gone over you, 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 you.
Nights I couldn't sleep. You let the sun beat you home. I asked myself over again. What am I doing wrong?
I mean, it's true. I mean, you can't waste your time on somebody who doesn't truly care about you. And that's basically, you know, what this song is about. You know, devoted so much time to find true faith, but boy, I nearly lost my mind. Like, you can't lose your mind over anybody.
Rowdy chick. Sometimes I have to fight because my mouth too slick.
It definitely resonates with me now. I was in a crappy relationship, and it can drain you and drain who you are. And that's what it did at one point. And, you know, I had to let it go, let it release it, and really find myself and be 100% comfortable with who I am. You know, I went a little crazy. I went a little crazy one day, but you know, that ain't never gonna happen again. I think trap was born in Atlanta. That's definitely a sound that Atlanta owns.
Atlanta is the home of a lot of trendsetters, mm-hmm. Definitely in music. So it's really hard, like, to say, but who knows, like, what we're gonna come up with, like, people in Atlanta, and like, we've been changing the sound of a lot of people. I just think we're very, very talented. There's something in the water here that, you know,
keeps us going and like lets us continue to be dope.
Yeah. Alex Bell and Isis Valentino of the Atlanta-based duo Saint Beauty. They'll perform tonight at 9 at the Afropunk Festival's Carnival of Consciousness in Atlanta. You can also visit the music tab at gpbnews.org for video of their recent in-house performance at GPB.
And now, we ain't going nowhere, nowhere. I feel something different every moment that I'm with you, like summer.
You know what? It's been a long week. We looked back on Clarence Thomas's 25 years on the Supreme Court. We got a sneak peek of the Afropunk Festival in Atlanta that you just heard about. And we learned about what movies are filming in our state. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It is time for The Break Room.
You're about to be hearing and seeing a lot of headlines about Colin Kaepernick this week, and surprisingly, it won't have to do with the national anthem.
The U.S. government and commercial companies are building new habitats to try to send humans safely to Mars within two decades.
Some people might see a needle in the street and in the process of picking up, be exposed to the deadly drug.
Joining us in the break room, Atlanta-based LGBT educator and activist Robbie Medwed, former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, Greg Williams, he hosts the conservative radio show Greg's List, and Kennesaw State University professor Roxanne Donovan is back as well. Welcome, everyone.
Good morning.
Happy Friday.
And to you.
Okay, so Donald Trump, his comments have caused quite a bit of controversy, whether it's been about veterans, immigrants, or people with disabilities. He's said a lot of very controversial things for at least the last year and a half, perhaps longer. Now he may have gone too far, and that's for a majority of voters anyway. Comments recorded more than a decade ago were unearthed, and they may have cost him the election.
I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the do anything.
Okay. Not easy to listen to, no matter how many times you've heard it. But here's the question. Why are these comments the tipping point? Why did we hear about banning Muslims from the U.S.? Why did we hear about things that were possibly unconstitutional and illegal? And why are these the ones that are turning people away?
I think we've got racism. I think that we, you know, we can
like
go
a disease?
Yes, it's absolutely
got the
a disease.
Racism,
we've got
people.
The racism. We have definitely had it for a while. But it's fine to talk about Mexicans that way. It's fine to talk about this group and that group. But once we start talking about white women, then we've gone too far.
I think that evangelical Christians, other Christians, basically have been championing Trump not as, you know, everything he's done is right, but is that he's going to do the best for them. He's going to get the right Supreme Court justices in. He's going to do better for business. And I've had several people who are voting for Trump this week still say to me, just because somebody does something wrong doesn't mean that we don't support them.
I think the flippant and casual manner in which he talks about perpetuating sexual assault and perpetrating sexual assault did something to the electorate that supported him. And also, the Bureau of Justice Statistics says that one in three women will experience sexual assault in their lifetime. So women have either experienced this or know people who have, and it's traumatic. So it's touched a nerve to the point where hotlines are receiving much more calls than they used to, and it's just harder to ignore. And I agree with Robbie, there was an othering of the women that he's talked about before, and now that it's personal, I think there's something very different about it for some of his supporters, unfortunately.
And yeah. Well, I think intellectually it's very difficult to argue, you know, against the perversion and the sexual comments. Some of the comments about building a wall, you can make an economic argument. You can. I feel like you can debate some of his comments. The anti-Muslim rhetoric, well, we seems like we're getting attacked, you know, at least once a month. So you can at least make some kind of logical argument. The comments about sexual assault, it's indefensible. And most of the, you know, the moderate Republicans are now saying, you know what, I can no longer even logically defend this. And that's why it's become such a problem.
And I think we have an element of that could be me, for sure. We don't see it as much with the anti-Muslim comments, with the anti-Mexican, although those groups have absolutely been shouting the same kind of stuff that the rest of us are now shouting.
Right.
But as soon as we realize this actually could happen to me, my family, my friends,
I also think Trump's response, saying this is just locker room talk, was a problem.
It clearly offended a lot of athletes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not just athletes. I think it was clearly a problem is the way he defended
it. As Roxanne said, dismiss it.
Yeah.
We definitely want to get listeners to weigh in on this. Give us a call at 404-500-9457, or you can tweet us. Kalina Michelle, who is, of course, no stranger to the break room, says, thank you for getting right to the point. Hashtag break room. Well, there's no question that the tone of this presidential race is perhaps nastier than it has been in the past. So much so that during the second debate on Sunday, the very first question was not about public policy. It was this, asked by audience member Patrice Brock.
The last presidential debate could have been rated as MA, mature audiences, per TV parental guidelines. Knowing that educators assign viewing the presidential debates as students' homework, do you feel you are modeling appropriate and positive behavior for today's youth?
Patrice was right on the money. A high school teacher in Kentucky asked his students to watch the debate as homework. He then tweeted out an apology saying, quote, I should have known better. He added that rather than learning about important issues, students watched someone who wants to be president behave in a way that would have sent him to the principal's office. So how do we feel about this? Are debates now unsuitable for kids? And did you let your kid watch?
They're definitely PG-13 now just because of the content. And I mean, you know, this teacher, Hillary Clinton, is no saint. So let's get that out there right away. But, you know, that second debate with them just squaring off, and it looked like there was some actual still shots that were taken, and it looked like they were actually singing to each other. So I saw a bunch of memes that were putting some pretty funny comments about them singing, like, you know, a Sonny and Cher duet. But it was certainly not anything policy-based, and it has turned into a who is worse. Donald Trump seems like he's running against Bill Clinton right now. Basically, his supporters are saying, Bill Clinton did this 20 years ago, and to me, that is the most illogical fallacy to make that
not
argument.
Running for president.
Little
bit. Frankly, as a woman, that's a little bit misogynistic.
Absolutely.
I really
hate the fact that the political process now isn't suitable for kids and for students. How else are we ever going to really improve this political system if we keep everyone out of it?
I think it is suitable. I mean, these are high schoolers. They're going to vote. We cannot hide the fact that this show is happening. They need to understand that this is occurring. They're going to be voters.
You call it a show.
It is. It's like a performance
in
some ways.
Parents need to watch with their kids. And I think, you know,
when
I was in high school and elementary school, we would watch any debate and we would watch national news every night, but I'd be watching with my parents. And so there's an explanation there when this goes on.
Okay. It's a great learning moment, teaching moment and learning moment.
I don't know. Maybe if you're under 9, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You know, how you explain this to a very young.
About sexual assault.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to another topic that is also not suitable for kids. There is a deadly new drug being sold around the country. It's called carfentanil. It's made by combining heroin with an elephant tranquilizer. Dozens of people have already died from this drug, and a sheriff in Michigan says it's becoming a major problem.
The opioid epidemic has been devastating enough. Now you add, you know, basically a 1-2 punch on top of it. It's a scary thing to families and to certainly the addicts and the outcomes of some of these situations.
So is this our next health crisis?
I think it's already a health crisis. I mean, opioid addiction is on the rise. The amount of prescriptions written is up astronomically. And these drugs are highly, highly addictive. And I know some people just write off the fact that those are addicts, so who cares? But I care. Addiction is a serious issue that we need to address. And as you get more and more addicted and your body becomes more acclimated to the drug, you need more and more. So you take more risk, which is what's happening. So I think we need a lot more treatment centers that address opioid addiction and the shaming of the population who are addicted to drugs. And I think we need to get very serious about how we keep those people on the margins and in the dark and not able to seek treatment in ways that
really
are necessary.
I was really shocked at first about the idea of an elephant tranquilizer, but then I remember that, you know, back in the 90s, horse tranquilizers were a really big thing, and they were very common all over the place, especially like rave culture, all that kind of stuff. So we're not so much strangers to that. I'd say, you know, it's not the next thing. It's here.
Yeah, I think the face of opioid addiction has changed as well, because it's hitting middle class America. The children now have these things called farm parties, where they basically raid their parents. They don't even know what the pills are. Some of them are like diabetes pills. Some of them are the painkillers, and they're just throwing them onto a tray. I guess I've seen too much Law and Order, but they literally are just eating all these pills. And the opioids have just been the go-to prescription for even minor tooth pain. You know, they're just like, here's some hydrocodone. You have a toothache. That shouldn't be prescribed so easily because of the addictive qualities of this, and the street value when you sell these is the addicts will basically on the street will crunch them up and then inject it or snort it, and it's extremely potent in that form.
And the move to heroin, because it's cheaper, becomes quite possible.
We got 30 seconds, Kathy. You got a response? No, you're just shaking your head.
Well, I've got my statistic. In between 2000 and 2014, nearly 500,000 people died from drug overdoses. So it's clearly an epidemic, and we haven't figured out how to deal with this, especially for young people.
My guests are Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List, Kennesaw State University professor Roxanne Donovan, Atlanta-based LGBT educator and activist Robbie Medwed, and former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr. And speaking of coffee, we want to say thank you, as always, to the Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that fuels our break room guests and my brain. It works, at least for me. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, the San Francisco 49ers are making a change to their starting lineup. Quarterback Colin Kaepernick will debut on the field in the upcoming game against the Bills. Now, Coach Chip Kelly announced the move this week. Kaepernick has been in the headlines for a totally different reason. It's because he's been choosing to kneel during the national anthem. And he says he's doing that to bring greater attention to social injustice in the nation.
There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed.
Reaction to his decision has been all over the map. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg recently called it, quote, dumb and disrespectful. President Obama said Kaepernick represents a long history of activism in sports. So let's move on to him coming back on the field. What do we think the reaction is going to be?
I think it's fantastic. I'm excited to see him. I'm not sure he's going to get that same reaction. You know, not everybody's going to love him for it. I think, though, he'll get a pretty decent amount of good stuff. I'm sure there'll be some boos.
I think it depends on how he plays.
I was about to say.
That's, you know,
if he throws for 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, and runs for 50, everybody's going to love him, right? He's replacing Blaine Gabbert, who's been one of the lowest-rated quarterbacks in history. And there's also a lot of contract discussions. Kaepernick is making $12 million. For this year, $11.9 million. And there's a dilemma about whether to play him or not, because if he gets hurt and is on injured reserve next year, they have to pay him for next year, too. So there's a lot of kind of behind the scenes going on with this move as well.
If they want to pay someone $12 million to not play, I will gladly, gladly show up.
I don't think
up.
That's how that works, Robbie.
I think that contract was renegotiated.
No, it hasn't been
in
yet.
In the last couple
no,
days?
That's the, no, that's well, it, unless it was just yeah, the last 48 hours, because I was... You know, every now and then I tune into SportsCenter.
You're kidding me, Greg. You're kidding me. That shocks me.
But there's definitely going to be more comments. I'm not sure what we're going to see until we see his, which is really kind of sad, but we'll see his play on the field and we'll see what people say.
Mm-hmm. I agree that it's sad, but what is protest supposed to be? I mean, yes, protest is inconvenient, but this is a beautifully simple, elegant, nonviolent protest for him to sit down. And I love that it's in a long line of other nonviolent protests by athletes like Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Olympics, right? And I think he should keep on doing it. And it took a lot of bravery for him to do it alone. He did not have a group with him. So
he's not alone now.
Yeah. Now he's not alone now, but he's 70 at least.
But he started it, right?
Right.
Unlike the Mizzou football players who did it as a group. So mm-hmm. I think keep on keeping on.
So Commissioner Tim Echols tweets, as a huge fantasy football enthusiast, I'm definitely not going to play Kaepernick on my team. Too risky. I'll stick with Cam, which I assume means Cam Newton.
Well, he's got a concussion. I think he's back this week.
Right. But, yeah. Okay. So you may be shocked by what I'm about to tell you. Here's the thing. It turns out there is no evidence that shows baby boomers work harder than younger generations. Some old timers might dispute that.
My day, if you wanted a baked potato, You had to put it in the oven for 11 hours.
That's right. You had to take a day off from work. Put the potato in it, then stay in all day and check on its progress.
Okay. Oh, a team of research has actually examined dozens of past studies on work ethic, and it turns out there is no significant difference in work ethic among different generations. So millennials do not work less than older generations. What do you make of this?
Not a surprise at all.
To you.
To me. I'm not a millennial. I'm on the cusp. I'm just barely
you're Gen Y-er?
Gen Y, absolutely. Or Generation Catalano or Oregon Trail, we also call ourselves sometimes. But I will say the millennials just work differently. You know, that's the difference. It's not the same kind of office job, grunt work stuff. But if you look at the amount of work they put in and the kind of things they're doing and what they're building, it's absolutely hard work. It just looks different.
I mean, they all attend Google University now. They're, you know, addicted to smartphone technology. They, you know, it is different kind of work. I don't really agree with that study, knowing the research that I've done anecdotally. So,
One generation is always going to disparage the generation after. Oh, they're never going to do anything. They're not going to contribute. At the end of the day, though, the economic future of millennials will be worse than those of the baby boomers. So they're going to have to, because wages aren't going up, they're going to have to work longer in order to make up the difference. So it may not be a choice.
Well, and there are more millennials in the workforce now than any other group.
Yeah.
Just
they're
recently.
The largest population in the office.
And I think there are a lot of myths that persist. I don't know that there is that much of it. I mean, I have heard the myths myself, and I've seen some things. But just because people are addicted to their technology, I know a lot of people that are baby boomers that are addicted to their
technology. Look, I want to just say anecdotally, my team is made up mostly of millennials, and nobody works harder than
everybody jokes about them being the participant trophy generation, but which group of people were buying those participant trophies for them? The 4-year-old, 5-year-old millennials were not going out and buying their own trophies.
Okay.
Their parents are the ones who kind of started that whole
for
thing.
For this loss? Is that
yes, absolutely.
Interesting. Oh, if you're just joining us, we are in the break room with former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, conservative talk show host Greg Williams, Kennesaw State University professor Roxanne Donovan, and you just heard Robbie Medwed, who's an Atlanta-based LGBT educator and activist. Let's move out of this world. Travel to Mars has long been fodder for movies, for novels, and for comedians.
The United States of Space, because I ain't stopping at the moon. Write this down. M-A-R-S, Mars.
That is Dave Chappelle. In an essay this week for CNN, President Obama renewed his call for American astronauts to visit Mars. He says this exploration won't just be to visit the red planet, but also to stay and make our lives better here on Earth as a result. This is also something Elon Musk is pushing pretty hard. So what do you think? Do you want to live on another planet? Also, let's comment on the conspiracy theory that Elon Musk is actually an alien and is just trying to get back to his home planet. Sorry, I'm kidding about that. But what do we think about this?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I have no desire to go. None whatsoever.
None.
Do you have no desire
to travel in space?
Nah, not really. I'm pretty happy here, but I think it's a fantastic thing for us to do. I love the aspirational aspect. I think we are a better people when we are hoping for something larger than ourselves. So I love that idea of it, but I've lived in other countries. I mean, that's pretty much as far as I really need to go.
And we might actually destroy this planet so that we have to live on
it.
Yeah,
we might have no choice.
there's
and then,
that.
You know, reconsider. But
they found water ice. So, you know, there's some idea that could work. Takes 8 months to get there now or more, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I might want to visit some point, but I would not want to live there.
If I could be beamed up,
Scotty,
and then beamed back, right?
Yeah.
So that I don't have to travel.
Red is a good color for me, though, so I might.
It's bitterly cold and harsh. That's why I left the Midwest.
I think the aspect of privatizing space travel, which SpaceX is doing, they're actually opening up a campus down in Camden County. I think that's a very admirable cause, and it is the future. But the problem is, you know, if we can't make people on this planet comfortable, I think it's going to be really hard to colonize Mars and make life comfortable there. So,
although if we can colonize multiple planets, then everyone can really get their own planet, and then you know exactly what you're getting into. And
we could make it so that each planet is for everyone that agrees with each other, so you'd never have to talk to somebody
but then
that
you,
disagrees
but then
with
even
you.
When you go to the planet, you know exactly what you're getting into.
I'm
so
starting to sweat, Robbie. Stop.
All right, let's stay in space for just a moment. The most recent revelation by the website WikiLeaks, one of the things that came out of that is that former Blink, this is so random, I don't even get it. Former Blink 182 singer Tom DeLonge wrote Hillary Clinton's campaign manager various messages about UFOs. So let's leave that aside and just go to Clinton's response. Hillary says she is open to declassifying some government files on UFOs. Here she is on Jimmy Kimmel.
I would like us to go into those files and hopefully make as much of that public as possible. If there's nothing there, let's tell people there's nothing there.
What if there is something there?
Well, if there is something there, unless it's a, you know, threat to national security, I think we ought to share it with the public.
Okay, so if Hillary Clinton becomes president and opens up the Roswell files, who here thinks we will find out that aliens have visited the United States?
That information has long been destroyed.
We can't keep our email secret. The government can't figure out how to keep anything secret. And they can keep a secret this big. I'm thinking not. Do I think aliens exist, meaning that there are life forms on other planets? I can't imagine that our universe does not, or our multiverse does not have life on other planets. But intelligent aliens coming down and then the government being
secret
enough to keep it a secret? And, oh,
well, yeah. The other question is, could, you know, space is such an infinite time, you know, we're 4 billion years old, but the universe is far older. Is it possible that two intelligent species would actually exist at the same time? Because we're just, you know, like 6,000 years of technology is a, you know.
But even past that, like the scary thing for me is that the Blink 182 lead singer has that kind of access. That's what's really concerning to me.
No, he didn't really get a lot of responses. Right. Yeah. He just sent the emails. By the way, since we're still on space here, Roxanne, you said you wanted to be transported, like in Star Trek, to Mars
please.
And back. Commissioner Tim Echols says the Star Trek transporter doesn't work that far. So, slapped down by
of course, Tim. Of course, Tim knows
Tim,
that.
Tim, you need to hook up the solar power to it.
Come on, Tim. Come on.
All right. Let's come back to Earth here. President Obama signed the Babies Act. Now, one of the things included in that requires that changing tables be available in all bathrooms, including men's rooms. And here's the thing. I had to change a baby many times in bathrooms. Have you ever had to change a baby in the bathroom? And so how important is that changing table?
It is my everything. Like, I could not imagine holding down the squirmy baby on the floor while, I mean, I really, really needed
it. And they usually have liners in the changing tables, which is also
very helpful. Yeah, I don't know. The changing tables look very poor. The ones that they look very unsanitary.
Better than
the
floor.
You use a liner.
Yeah.
And it is better than the floor. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the bathrooms here look like they have changing tables in the men's room. I haven't been in there. You haven't been in there? No, trust me, they do. Robbie will attest to that.
Yeah. I've got friends. You know, I myself have not changed babies' diapers in really anywhere, but I've got friends with kids who. Their joke is, if there is a changing table, then the father will change the baby. Otherwise, he's off the hook. And I know that they go back and forth. And so,
or hand the baby off
right,
to the
they
mom.
Hand him off to somebody else.
This was a regulation that actually limited government. Greg isn't too opposed to, you know.
It's, wow. This is a banner day in the break.
I'm changing, guys. I'm evolving.
Wow. And while we're at it, the next step might be, I don't know, look at parental leave, paid parental leave.
Don't get crazy
here.
I don't know.
Hey, Maybe Roxanne, that would be that's a good crazy thing. Talk right there. Mm-hmm.
That comes off the news that daycare costs
leave.
More than college tuition.
Than college.
Yeah. All right. We have just a few minutes left, so let's dig into one more thing. There's a new study out that shows patients get different care from doctors based on the doctor's political affiliation. A group of researchers at Yale linked publicly available information on more than 42,000 practicing physicians. That is a large pool. Here are some of their findings. Democrats, doctors, were less likely to discuss the health risks of marijuana. Republican doctors were twice as likely to discourage patients from having abortions. And with a less politicized issue like drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes, the difference diminished. We can post more of those findings at our website, gppnews.org. But does this make you want to check your doctor's political leanings?
Before I read this,
read the article, I thought, I don't care. I just want them to treat me well. And then I read the article and thought, oh, no, now I'm going to have to look this up. All I want is empirically supported treatment that's going to keep me well or treat what ails me. It was really scary to think, and I don't know why I was so naive to think that this, too, would not be politicized, but it was really scary for me to think that doctors would be treating people differently depending on their political affiliation.
LGBT people have been dealing with that for decades. I mean, we have specific rosters of doctors who will or won't treat people based on who they are, if they're not going to get hormone treatments, if they're not going to get certain antiretroviral AIDS drugs or whatever it might be. So we've been looking at this kind of thing for really decades.
So not shocked.
Yeah, not in the slightest. Well, and I still go, when I have to go to the doctor, I look up who's gay friendly, who's not gay friendly, all that kind
of
stuff.
We have such a shortage of physicians and medical professionals in general in this country, so it's not so easy to fire your doctor. I mean, we've got...
That's also a great point.
You can't just say, well, this guy, now I looked up his Facebook page, and apparently he's got a pro-life sticker on there, so I can't, you know, he doesn't respect the woman's right to choose, so I can't go to him anymore. I think most patients interview their doctors a little bit, so there's a comfort zone there, or there should be. Now, if it's a new doctor that you're going to, you have no idea what their political affiliations are, and that's why you get the second opinion.
But I think this is very reasonable, and of course, my response was, of course, people get treated differently, and doctors treat people differently. And also, people with money get different treatment. Movie stars get different treatment.
People of different races get different treatment, even if they have the exact same health insurance.
Right. And so I think this is not surprising. And I will say that I was treated differently by different doctors once they found out that I worked for NPR.
Mm. Wow. Whoa, wait, what? Are you going to go into that further? No, you can't just drop that and then walk.
That's mic drop time.
Celeste is now rethinking everything she knows.
We all inhaled when you said it.
I know, like, what?
Either favorably or disfavorably. So depending on what
Because
the doctors...
of the perceived bias, which is untrue, that public radio is liberal?
Right.
Which is untrue?
Completely
So then I would
untrue.
I would take time to explain to people what it is I did for a living and... You know, and then I would find a different physician if that was the case.
Wow. I mean, this is part of health disparities. I mean, and I wonder if we have to include it then in the health disparities we talk about when we're talking about the way not only LGBT people are treated, but African Americans are treated very differently when they go to a hospital. We only have about a minute left to get into something this deep.
But do the politics define whether or not they're a skilled doctor? That would be my other question.
No,
right?
But it defines how are you treated.
Yeah, treatment options you're given will make a difference in whether you get well faster.
And what is how are you treated even as a person?
Right.
It's just, you know, are you respected as a person because you're whatever your background is and your race is?
Right. If your politics.
What you should do is just ask the doctor what their political affiliation and say, I'm that too.
Well, there are times, but I mean, you know, we actually, like in the LGBT community, we've created lists. We have resources and websites with lists of people who are trans friendly, who are gay friendly, who will or won't do this kind of thing. So if you're someone who's trans in a small community in Georgia and you need your hormones because that's going to be life saving for your mental health and your physical safety, then you need to choose the right doctor who's going to be okay with prescribing those hormones to you.
That's common.
Don't want to go to a doctor and, to Kathy's point, get treated less than. It's enough. You go to the doctor in a vulnerable position. You're not there to have fun or party.
I want him or her to give me all the options, not the ones that they think are moral or right.
And treat you with dignity and respect.
Right, but then you get into
Robbie's
also
point.
Who's, you know, which pharmacy companies are sending them free samples and which drugs
that's,
are pushing.
And that's
so
true.
We are out of time, although we could keep talking. Probably will keep
issue.
Talking about this. Yeah. I want to say thank you to all my guests, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, Robbie Medwed, Atlanta-based LGBT educator and activist, Greg Williams of Conservative Talk Radio, Kansas State University Professor Roxanne Donovan. This is On Second Thought.